It would be grand, I think, to visit a museum with her. She might take us by the hand and stand in front of a canvas, say, by Hopper, the American painter, Edward Hopper, who created that well-known scene of the all-night diner, we the viewers passing by, watching four figures in the harsh light within the drabness of that setting. Well, she might take us up to Hopper's gas station scene and help us to see not just the surface, but the richness there. Gas, from Three by Hopper, by poet Barbara Crooker. I like the loneliness of old gas stations. Pegasus, a faded red, about to fly off into the sky, which stretches above the dark pines, the rural road running by, a river, all curves and meanders. The white paint's flaked off the wooden shingles, and the Drink Coca-Cola sign is stained with rust, but the light in the window casts a yellow glow on the cement. I think my parents are about to cruise up in their Buick, a big gray boat of a car, the one that was up on blocks during the war, and they have no idea what darkness lies ahead. She's happy, leaning back on the plush seat, the night air riffling her page boy. He leans his arm out the window, the ash of his cigarette eddying to the ground. The lone attendant fills their tank, checks the oil, wipes both windshields until they gleam, then returns to his metal chair, his solitary vigil. Keeper of the lighthouse, pilot of the night. Gas, from Three by Hopper, by poet Barbara Crooker, and that's just it, whether she helps us see into the scene in a painting and extrapolate to life, not just to feel, but to taste, to savor, even the loneliness and isolation that might be there for the moment, but always the abundance of beauty that lies even deeper, the power of love and light and the rhythms of nature. Barbara Crooker is an award-winning writer from the Lehigh Valley. Her poems have appeared in the Green Mountains Review, the Christian Science Monitor, Nimrod, the Denver Quarterly, Poetry International, the Christian Century, America, and anthologies such as the Bedford Introduction to Literature, Good Poems for Hard Times, Boomer Girls, and Commonwealth, Contemporary Poets on Pennsylvania. She is the recipient of the 2007 Pen and Brush Poetry Prize, the 2006 Ekphrastic Poetry Award from Rosebud, the 2004 W.B. Yeats Society of New York Award, the 2004 Pennsylvania Center for the Book Poetry in Public Places Competition, the 2003 Thomas Merton Poetry of the Sacred Award, the 2003 April is the Cruelest Month Award from poets and writers and others, including three Pennsylvania Council on the Arts Creative Writing Fellowships, and 14 residencies at the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts. A many-time nominee for the Pushcart Prize, Barbara Crooker was a 1997 Grammy Awards finalist for her part in the audio version of the popular anthology Grow Old Along With Me, The Best Is Yet to Be. Her books are Radiance, which won the 2005 WordPress First Book Competition, Line Dance, which came out from WordPress in 2008 and won the 2009 Patterson Award for Literary Excellence, and most recently, More, from C&R Press, 2010. Her poetry has been read on the BBC, the Australian Broadcasting Company, and many times by Garrison Keillor on The Writer's Almanac. Recently, she read in the Poetry at Noon series at the Library of Congress and in Auvillar, France. Barbara Crooker paid a visit to the WVIA studios to read from her work and to talk about her passion for painting and the visual arts.
As an undergraduate, I was an art history minor. And again, I didn't realize this at the time as a 17-year-old, but I set off on another path where I have absolutely no talent in that area whatsoever. I'm not a Sunday painter or something like that. Zero. But I love reading books and looking at paintings. What else in this life would let me do those two things other than writing poetry about paintings? And that school of poetry is called ekphrastic poetry, which is a big fat Greek word, remember my big fat Greek wedding, that simply it is poetry which has a conversation with art. Generally it's painting, but it can be sculpture. It could be music. It's curious because there are many what I would call ekphrastic novels these days, such as The Girl with a Pearl Earring, and there are many, many others, but they don't seem to use this critical term for fiction. I don't know why.
We don't have to have you in a Russian Orthodox cathedral or church with icons on the wall, but there is that sense that there is a presence in a painting. There's something there other than just the marks on the canvas.
Yes, and I would hope that that same presence is in a poem that aren't just typed letters on a page. And it's a fine line. I'm writing a book review right now, and I admired the writer that I was talking about who veered towards the sentimental but didn't fall over onto that other side. And that's the risk when you're writing about highly emotionally charged subjects. So you don't want to take the easy way out.
Do you have a poem related to a painter?
Well, in this one, and again, because I've been exploring ekphrastic work, I've been lecturing on it, and so what I'm looking for as a reader in an ekphrastic poem is not one that simply describes a painting or a work of art. I want there to be some sort of personal relationship. In this poem, this is an email friend of mine who lives on the West Coast, who I've only met F2F, as they say, in the person once, but who was emailing me about her husband, the second husband, you know, deep second marriage, and he had this mass on his stomach that they were saying was okay, but it needed to be removed, and when they did the exploratory surgery, it was cancerous, and it was the type of cancer that was supposed to not respond to radiation or chemotherapy, and they essentially told him he just had a few months. When I wrote the poem, and I wrote it after spending a lot of time with Monet's Poppy Field Argenteuil painting, I not only put my friend in the poem, in the painting, but I'm also clearly putting myself into her shoes in this. And I will say that anytime something is collected in a book means that it was written years before, then appeared in a magazine, then later got collected in a book. And so where he was given 6 months, he's had 6 years. I think right now there's some tests that are coming up that aren't boding well, but I think we can also step back and say doctors don't always know everything. And so I hope and wish all the best for them. And I've never actually met him, but he's in the poem. So the title of the poem is For Judy, whose husband is undergoing surgery. Nothing much is going on in this painting. High summer, rolling clouds, deep blue sky. The tall poplars fill the left-hand side of the canvas. The Seine slithers a silvery S, barely visible through the leaves. Someone is standing in the field, knee-deep in poppies. It could be you, before the diagnosis, when your life seemed to spread out like a meadow of wildflowers. The detail here is lost in the brush strokes, dots and dashes of red and yellow, green and blue, small exclamations of color, the sky pressing down from above. Now you are trying to decipher the doctor's calligraphy, the impenetrable code of sonogram and MRI, the odds of choosing this treatment or that. The poppies flare like matches struck in the dark or something that should not be there on the monitor screen. If you were to bend and pick them, they would wilt in your hand, the hot orange petals falling to the ground. All you can do is raise your face to the light, which shimmers, elusive, changes but stays the same, a Zen riddle. It's the only thing you can hold on to, and it slips like water through your hands. Now, if I were not a gardener, I wouldn't have put in this fact that when you pick poppies, you can't pick poppies and put them in a glass of water. They're one of the few flowers that can't be cut flowers.
Of course, the French Impressionists working with light and the light coming through, there's got to be more than just the sunlight, the light from the clouds. There's a sense of a metaphysical light, yes?
I hope, yes. Metaphysical, metaphorical. My first book was called Radiance, and I was attempting, and I hope I succeeded, in putting together a collection which was entirely spiritual without mentioning any religion or dogma or deity. But I was dealing in that collection with different qualities of radiance of light. And, of course, in literature, I think that, it's traditional that Christ is the sun. You know, that's not something new I invented.
The idea, though, too, of beauty. What about beauty in life? We know that in art in the 20th century, beauty sometimes took it on the chin, but beauty can be terrifying, can't it?
Absolutely. Well, I think Yeats is talking about the terrifying beauty. I think you're right. I've read a number of essays on the role of beauty in the 21st century, because many contemporary pieces, whether in music or in art, are not what we would consider traditionally beautiful. And yet, I think we all have a longing for beauty in our lives and need to find it. And part of my other underlying thing, I think, as a writer, is in looking for beauty in the everyday, in the common, in the easily overlooked.
The title of this collection is simply the word more. And we've just been talking about the everyday. You are, in a sense, perhaps suggesting that there's more than meets the eye in our ordinary life experience.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. That is definitely one of the things I was looking for. And the yearning for more, the need to look for more beneath the surface. The fact that we are very finite creatures and we want more. We want more time. We want more of all of the things that we want. There's a poem that speaks to that quite directly.
Yes, please.
Are you ready for another one? Narrative. This morning's miracle. Dawn turned up its dimmer, set the net of dew on the lawn to shining. The sky, lightly iced with clouds, stretched from horizon to horizon, not an inch to spare, and later the sun splashed its bucket of light on the ground. But it's never enough. The hungry heart wants more. Another 10 years with a man you love, even though you've had 30. One more night rinsed in moonlight, bodies twisted in sheets. One more afternoon under the plane trees by the fountain with a jug of red wine and bits of bread scattered around. More, even though the grasses are glowing in the dying light and the hills are turning all the syllables of lavender as evening draws the curtains, turns on the lamps. One more book, one more story, as if all the words weren't already written, as if all the plots haven't been used, as if we didn't know the ending already, as if this time we thought it could turn out differently.
You have such an exquisite use of color. The lavender here, for example. So your sense of being drawn to art history.
And when I have colony time, I find that painters are often drawn to my work. One time a reviewer, who probably shouldn't have done this, but sent me a review before he submitted it, just for me to look over. And in this case, I was quite glad he did, because he called me a painter. He thought that because I write about the physicality of painting, that I actually was a painter, and I had to say, oh, no, 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 no. I think part of the other thing that draws me to art, I've had a somewhat schizophrenic life in that my main occupation is caregiver for my son with autism. Now, my husband worked for a small chemical company in Philadelphia, which then got taken over by the world's third largest petrochemical company based in Paris. So suddenly he was being sent to France 2 or 3 times a year for meetings. So we took advantage of, we could take a week here, we could take a week there, I could tie it on after he was done with his meeting so we could travel in France. And so I've had this rich love affair with France, even though it's only been for a week or 10 days at a time, but it's been continuous, and I always knew I could go back again.
And so when you're looking at Monet, you have seen
some of those things. Or this one time, my husband was at work, I was on the subway, I had intended to go to the Louvre that day, got there and learned new vocabulary word, en grève, which was on strike, which they happen in France without announcements and things. You just get someplace and they are on strike. And so I was simply on the metro going maybe back to the hotel when I saw a advertisement for Les Nymphéas, which I knew stood for water lilies, and got off at the next stop so I could actually read the sign, found out there was this exhibit, went to it, found out that, yeah, I should have had a time ticket, but hey, if you didn't, here's a line you could just wait in. And so, you know, really, again, talking about serendipity, I got to see 4 rooms full of the water lily paintings from the very earliest to the really wild and crazy at the end. And I wouldn't have.
Did you write about that experience?
I did. It's a very long poem, which I probably won't be in a book. It's been in a journal, but it's very long.
When we get these moments of serendipity, you have to
to work with them. Yeah. You have to say, this is a given. This is a piece of material I've been given. Now, what can I do with it?
Tell me about the front cover.
Oh, I would love to. I wish this was television. It's a very lively, very colorful contemporary painting by a painter named Marilyn Banner, who I met when I was at the Colony at the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, the VCCA. And I'm on dial-up in the Lehigh Valley. We don't have high speed available in my neighborhood. So I can't tell you how many hours I spent at her website, because each painting was very slow to load, trying to pick the one that I thought captured the feeling of the poems about contemporary artists that are in this book. There's a lot of Fauves. There's a number of Matisse poems and Raoul Dufy poems. And I wanted something, I felt like the rhythm and the colors in this particular painting really kind of echoed what I was looking for.
And yet, if you looked at it too, you could say, garden.
Yes, yes. I know Marilyn, and I know she takes her inspiration from nature. Now, the one thing that you can't see, if you pick up my book even, is that this is an encaustic painting, which is layer upon layer of wax-based material. So it's very thick and very textured, but a photograph of it can't do that.
Having a book like this and being able to share it with us in this way and to read, do you like that experience of going out to actually speak it so people can hear it? Do you love that, going out and doing readings?
I actually do now. Initially, and because I'm on my way home from being back in upstate New York where I had lived 40 years ago, when I first started, I was a person just paralyzed by stage fright. And all the physical manifestations of stage fright, the rapid heartbeat, the dry mouth, the shaking, the throwing up in the bathroom beforehand. And somehow through dumb repetition, blessedly, that has gone away. And I do really feel that poetry is meant to be an oral art. Its origins were around the fire, in the caves. And I think that once people hear any writer read their work once, you can keep that voice with you in your mind when you later pick up their new books and you come across a poem by them in a magazine. You can hear them. I can hear Charles Wright reading, for example, when I pick up one of his poems, because I've been to several of his readings, and he's another one I admire. I mean, my list is huge.
And I know that you're in our listeners' ears very often through the lips of Garrison Keillor on the Writer's Almanac, which must be such a wonderful thing for you when you get the word.
They do write and ask for permission. Ironically, you know, I live in the Lehigh Valley, and the only way I can listen to it is to drive north until I can pick up WVIA. Now, TWA sends CDs later, but it's a CD of the whole week, and I get it in my inbox, and I don't really get around to listening to it.
There also must be something, I would think, special about the
hearing it on the air. Yeah, yeah. Even though I know it's not live, I know I get the permission 2 weeks ahead of time, but it seems like it's live.
And what's next?
I do have a completed manuscript of poems about my mother's last illness and death. I have a 2-book contract with CNR Press, but they could decide it's not a good match. But, you know, that's the writing life. I'm open to possibilities. I think it's a completed manuscript and a good manuscript, so I will continue to pursue that. I'm someone for whom getting into book publication took a good 15, 20 years. It's a difficult journey because there are so many good writers writing right now and so few poetry readers. We need you readers out there. And, you know, one of the things I say about poetry's role, after September 11th, what were people passing around the internet? They weren't passing around news clippings from CNN or the UPI. They were passing around poems. And Auden was just as fresh and meaningful as poems that were written later about September 11th.
We don't want to leave without one more poem of your choice.
This one, I think, speaks to, again, some of my underlying themes in all of my work, not necessarily in this book. And it's called Strewn. It had been a long winter. Rags of snow hanging on. Then, at the end of April, an icy nor'easter, powerful as a hurricane. But now, I've landed on the coast of Maine, visiting a friend who lives 2 blocks from the ocean, and I can't believe my luck. Out this mild morning, race-walking along the strand. Every dog within 50 miles is off-leash, running for the sheer, dopey joy of it. No one's in the water, but walkers and shellers leave their tracks on the hard pack. The flat sand shines as if varnished in a painting. Underfoot, Strewn are broken bits and pieces, deep indigo mussels, whorls of whelk, chips of purple and white wampum, hinges of quahog, fragments of sand dollars. Nothing whole. Everything broken, washed up here, stranded. The light pours down a rinse of lemon on a cold plate. All of us broken, some way or other. All of us dazzling in the brilliant slanting light.
And that's it. We all are broken.
We are. We are. Very much so. Very much so.
And yet there is the capacity for joy,
hope, love. Human contact, the need for it. And the person I was visiting in that poem was another former Lehigh Valley writer, Linnea Johnson, who now is in Kansas, moved to Kansas. But on her way to moving to Kansas, she happened to be living in Portland, Maine, when I happened to have a reading with an organization that really couldn't pay me very much. And so I needed to be able to stay with somebody. And it was perfect.
And I love the title, Strewn.
Thank you.
Because there are graces that are strewn in our pathway, and if we open our eyes, we can see the beauties before us on the path.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Award-winning writer Barbara Crooker of the Lehigh Valley, reading her poem Strewn from her most recent collection titled More, issued by C&R Press, and talking about her work. Barbara Crooker will be offering a poetry workshop on Saturday, February 4th, as part of the Blue Mountain Women's Weekend at the Menchmill Conference Center, Huff's Church, Pennsylvania, which is south of Macungie. It will be titled Writing from the Heart, Saturday, February 4th, from noon to 1:30. For more information on the web, barbaracrooker.com. And Crooker is spelled C-R-O-O-K-E-R, barbaracrooker.com. And keep listening to The Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor. As we said, he's read many of Barbara Crooker's poems on the program, and there will be more to come undoubtedly. For more information, barbaracrooker.com.